Hey, TV fans and fans of TV podcasts. We're here with another episode of the TV Insider Podcast and hope you and your loved ones are staying safe and healthy while we weather the COVID-19 crisis. Thankfully, there's still plenty of entertainment to keep our minds occupied on television as much as possible. I'm Jim Halterman. I'm the West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide Magazine. And in this episode, we're checking in at the 9-9, as in NBC's sitcom Brooklyn Nine-Nine. The Golden Globe Best Comedy winner began its run on Fox in 2013, and after it was shockingly canceled in 2018, NBC wisely picked it up, where it's been airing since January of 2019. One of the original cast members for the show is Stephanie Beatriz, who brings Rosa Diaz to life, and even with her deadpan delivery as the tough-as-nails detective, has made the character multi-layered and as fascinating as she is funny. I sat down recently with Beatriz in Hollywood to talk about the show and find out what she'd like to see happen for Rosa, which could be possible because the sitcom has already been renewed for an 8th season. And also we talked about her upcoming role in the movie In the Heights, which has been delayed a little bit because of the COVID-19 crisis, but will be in theaters hopefully sooner than later. But for now, let's check out my chat with Stephanie Beatriz. All right, we're here with Stephanie Beatriz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So good to see you again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
One, I'm glad the show is still around.
Me too.
Because we know what happened a couple of years ago. But
you, me, and my 401k are all very glad it's still around.
And NBC treats you guys very well, as they should.
Very well.
Because it's a good Thursday night kind of staple with all the other shows around
yes.
there. I want to go back, though. It was funny. This weekend I was watching the Visible Out on Television
docuseries. Oh, the documentary, yeah.
And I watched all 5 episodes, and it was really great. So it made me think about Rosa and just mm-hmm. representation. Mm-hmm. And what were some of the early talks when the show was just kind of shaping, even before, maybe after the pilot, but once you guys knew you were going to series, and
yeah.
what Mike wanted to do with the character and just shaping
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you know, I think originally, Mike Schur and Dan Gore had kind of this plan that sort of hit a lot of the notes that I think sitcoms have come to be known for, which is, you know, there's a male character that might be in love with a female character. It's unrequited. In this mm-hmm. case, it was Charles Boyle and Rosa Diaz. And, you know, they're such opposites and they play off of each other really well. And there's like, definitely in the pilot episode, there's like little sprinklings of, you know, oh, will they, won't they? Could this possibly?
Right.
And then as we progress in the show, I think Dan Gore, especially, you know, started to feel like it wasn't the right fit. And the characters that he had created, he was kind of trying to force them into a preconceived mold of yeah. sitcom television and really realized through the way that Joe and I were playing these characters that they were such a strong friendship, a true friendship between a man and a woman on TV that doesn't really like, it just doesn't work the way that, you know, I think in my own life, I've had so many male friends where I've, you know, feel so much love and care for them. And there's no element of it like, oh, is it going to be, won't we? No, it's just, this is a human being and they're my good friend. And so in that way, I think that sort of developed naturally over the course of like the first couple of seasons and the way Joe and I were playing things.
Yeah. And you're then, right though, when they force it, it never works.
You know, when it's forced, it doesn't work. But at the same time, like how smart of Dan and Mike to give, you know, studio executives and network executives what they think they want, you know,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
because they do, they're used to making a TV show is a huge gamble. And so like, mm-hmm. what's going to work? I know this thing that's worked a million times before.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, and also I think a lot of times for the writers, having talked to them is once you get the actors together, sometimes things, either there is chemistry
yeah,
off the charts that you didn't see or they don't. And like
right.
the friendship is there. And it was funny because watching the season at 7 episodes, I totally forgot that was such a big part of
yeah,
the early
yeah.
early seasons.
And I think Rosa and Charles have really forgotten too. I don't think it's a mistake that Dan wrote and made it so, A, that Rosa would come out as bisexual in the 99th episode, one of the most important episodes
yeah.
of the run, and B, that she would come out first to Charles Boyle.
Yeah.
Like, I think that yeah. is such a beautiful sort of like end cap to the growth of those two characters. And really like, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, I guess, but like the growth of, I think what's possible in American sitcom comedy television. It's
yeah.
like, you think you want this, but really you're so open to so many more roads in a sitcom than you've ever even thought of.
Yeah. And now it's just a part of the show. Like
mm-hmm.
it's not a big moment, so to speak, when she does talk about her girlfriend
right.
or just about being bi, or
yes.
And there's something in the Jimmy Jab episode where she and Andre's Captain Holt, they're kind of competing.
Yes.
And she even says something about, well, I'm, you know, my parents. She says something about her parents not understanding. Right. And it's all just a ruse. And it's kind of a joke. But I was like, I just love that that can even be in there. And that's not like a moment. It's like she's manipulating him. And that's what she's using. Yeah, and it's just like anything else.
It's kind of great to have it be just now part of the fabric of who she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are the episodes easy to film at this point? You guys have been together for so long. And outside of just learning lines, but the rhythms are just so natural to the viewer, but how is it for you guys as you're shooting?
It's definitely more, for me, it's more fun than it's ever been, because I think for the first four seasons, I was absolutely fucking terrified.
Were you really?
Terrified.
Okay.
Because I'd never done anything like that really before. I was used to live audiences. I was used to much more rehearsal time. I was used to doing plays for months at a time. I had done a couple guest stars, but this was the first time I'd really clocked any kind of hours on a set. And I'm working with people that I think of as like legends, like Andy and Andre, you know?
Yeah.
And I think at least for me now, it's really fun and joyful in a way that it didn't used to be. Even just like improvisation was difficult for me up until I would say like season six.
Wow. Like, okay.
It makes me nervous. And I remember saying to Andy once, it's like, oh God, every time I do an improv line, I like start sweating, my hands start sweating, I flop sweat. He was like, that's just because you haven't done it enough.
Yeah.
And so that forced me during all of season six and season seven, I was like riffing as much as I possibly could anytime it felt right. Because I thought, I got to practice. Otherwise, I'm never going to get better at this.
Yeah. Well, and what a great group of people to learn from.
Incredible group.
Amazing.
Incredible. It's masterclass every day at work. It's awesome.
Wow. Well, watching those early seasons, I never would have thought, because I felt like you had such a handle on who Rosa was. And even though at the beginning she was very hard and that's kind of who she was, like they've developed her so much over the seasons.
Yeah,
but
yes.
I also give that a lot to you, is just to get to know the character and knowing how to play her.
Thank you. I mean, I think that was, even in my nervousness, that's the place that I have the most confidence. It's strange that the place that I have the most confidence really is disappearing into another person. That's where I feel the most safe of all.
Yeah. I think you find a lot of times with actors, especially people doing comedy, that they're not always the most outgoing people. They are kind of shy sometimes and very soft-spoken, but yet it all comes out when they do their performance.
Yeah, yeah.
So I see that a lot. Also in the Jimmy Jab episode, we found out that Rosa has broken up with Jocelyn.
That's right.
And so I'm curious, where is that going to, will we see her again? Or is she going to be dating? Or what can you talk about as far as what's coming?
I think in terms of Rosa's personal life, I think this one really like hurt a lot in a way that I think like was very, I hope, visible in the storytelling. I haven't seen that episode yet, so I don't know how good I did.
You did very well.
Great.
You did very well.
She also hasn't like, she's very loath to even tell people where she lives, much less like invite them into her personal space. You know, I think that's weirdly why Pimento was such a safe kind of bet for her, because he was so unpredictable and off the wall that she didn't really need to worry about it. But with someone more sort of stable and real like Jocelyn, like that's a really painful breakup. I mean, she's willing to, we saw in that the season before that she was willing to make concessions about her work life for Jocelyn, which she's never ever done to anyone, and it was really, really hard. And so to have that not work out, I think is like pretty brutal, and weirdly for Rosa probably will mean maybe a step, or like maybe like a stillness for a moment.
Because
I think like, I don't think she expected that. I think she thought like, okay, well, I'm gonna make a change in some of my work life for this person, and that'll be the end of it, you know. In almost like in a very like Mad Men-y kind of like ad executive man that's not in touch with his feelings kind of way of like, all right, well, I did the thing that you wanted. Aren't you happy now? You know, and not really understanding that some people need more than that. And it's not enough, you know?
Wow.
So I think there'll be like a little bit of stillness for her for a moment.
Which also makes sense, because I guess in just what I know about Rosa from the viewer standpoint, you wouldn't expect her just to jump into another relationship right away,
because
it was probably so hard for her just to open her heart in the first place.
And she's like seeing, you know, Jake and Amy like making these big strides in their relationship. And I think for her, it's like, okay, well, I just slipped into her voice. I think like how does she navigate like, well, what she thinks she might want with what she's capable of giving right now.
Yeah. And what with social media being such a big thing, and I know you're on there playing a bisexual character, being bisexual in real life and being very open about it. what do you hear from fans that are seeing that play out? Because that was another thing in the Visible documentary. There's a whole section on bisexual characters and how unrepresented they were for a while. And now they're out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the main thing that's really exciting is that people feel seen. Because I will say, as a kid growing up and being, you know, the word now that we're using is intersectional. And I think that's a great word to use. But, like, I never saw myself on TV. Like, I saw maybe a version of myself or, like, a side of myself. Or Liz Fumero has said this really great, funny thing. She's like, oh, I would always look for the girl with the brown hair. And then I would feel like, okay, well, at least there's a brown-haired girl on TV, you know. But that's literally, that's grasping at straws. That's like starving and feeding, like feasting off of the crumbs that are being thrown at you. Mm-hmm. And like, so to know that I'm maybe part of someone feeling like they're turning on their TV and thinking, oh, okay, I belong. I'm here. I'm not invisible. I exist. Yeah. That's a big, big thing. And it can, and really like make people feel, you know, worthwhile in a world that sometimes doesn't make you feel that way.
Yeah. Well, thanks for,
I hope.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my hope.
No, well, thanks for doing that, because now that I watched that documentary, I see how important, I was reminded how important it all is, because I take it for granted because I've been out a long time and there have been a lot of gay, I mean, when I was a kid, there weren't a lot of gay characters, and now there's so many. It's easy to take it for granted. And then you see like a little moment.
It is easy to take it for granted. Yes. But there's like so many levels of, you know, there's so many sides to the gay and queer community, and there's so many versions of us, and the thing that I think that we collectively as an American audience can sometimes forget is that there are so many facets to that beautiful gem, you know.
Yeah.
And the job that I think we have as artists and actors and producers, I hope to be a producer someday, is like to continue to turn the gem and show the facets of it.
Yeah, because there's people out there who are just trying to figure it out. And if they see a storyline play out or just a little reference, that means everything to them.
Might mean years of like confusion and pain sort of like explained in a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you did direct last season. Mm-hmm. What did that do for you as an actor, as an artist? Because I know you have to look literally through a different lens, but it's also, you're not looking at it from the actor's perspective as much. Did you find yourself like using a different part of your brain or?
Yeah. I mean, weirdly, I had a very fun time directing, because I like watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but I have a hard time watching myself because I'm hypercritical of what I'm doing and I kind of hate it. And it took a long time for me to even like not hate my face and my body on TV, you know, like it took a long time. I had a struggle with like eating disorder and like sense of self and self-worth. Mm-hmm. And so what happens when you're on a TV show and then you direct an episode of that TV show is that you don't have to look at yourself at all. You just get to look at the other people and their amazing work. I think some of the time I might have done too many takes because I was having such a good time and it was so funny. But I also think like what excited me the most about directing was really like the comedy stuff is absolutely joyful and fun. And I mostly just let my co-stars do what I already knew that they were capable of doing. Not necessarily that I knew every step they were going to take, but I knew they were capable, right? But the dramatic stuff, and there was a little bit of that in my episode, that to me was the most fun, because I was watching these two actors that don't get to flex those muscles on our show very much. Yeah. And like, I was able to create space for them to do that. I was able to guide them toward multiple different kinds of performances within that scene so that we had stuff that we could pick and choose from, because ultimately Dan Gore is going to set the tone of what that episode is. And so I didn't want to just hand him, you know, like, here's footage from an indie film. But also I'm mostly excited because I got to be a witness to that, be sort of the gatekeeper or caretaker of that, and then see, like, you know, I think an audience gets used to an actor one way and they forget that these people are craftsmen, craftspeople. And watching Andy and Melissa do that scene was like, they are such fucking good actors. They are really good actors. Yeah. And that was really thrilling to me. I want to do more just to watch actors be good.
Yeah. And what kind of producing do you want to do? Do you want to do television, film, theater, the gamut?
I think I'd like to start with television. I think mm-hmm. that it's an exciting time. It's the Wild West, you know? And I think there's a ton of room and a ton of money for stories that haven't been told yet to be told. And I'm talking about truly American stories with what you might not think of as an American as the lead of that story. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're seeing that more and more. I think I'm interested in telling specifically Latinx and indigenous stories, female centric stories, stories that are rooted in truth and maybe sometimes pain, but ultimately a lot of beauty with a side of joy and fun, because I think that's the only way you're going to be able to tell those stories for anybody to want to watch them. You know?
And we're seeing more of those too, where One Day at a Time is a great example.
Yes,
but also Vita on Stars. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all shows that are showing viewers a different world that we haven't seen before.
Absolutely.
As much.
And both of those shows are really set in culture that's in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's right, they are.
How exciting to start to move the stories a little further west, or east rather, or southern, those are stories that I don't feel have been really told yet. And there's so much of America that looks so very vastly different than we might expect or think or assume. And that's exciting to me.
Yeah. How's it been for you when you go to other shows, whether it's, to go back to Modern Family or do One Day at a Time, which you and Melissa both did last year. So fun. But how was that for you? Because I know sets are always different and there's different, not just vibes, but there are different shows. Mm-hmm. But how has that been for you?
Awesome.
Kind of step into there. Yeah.
Awesome. I mean, Modern Family was so cool because, here's legend Ed O'Neill shaking your hand and welcoming you to set for the first time. And, and Sophia was so nice to me. They're all so busy on that show, but they always took time to be kind and funny and nice and generous. And even people that I didn't have scenes with were welcoming and kind. That's and cool. The same happened over at One Day at a Time. And that was also, there's Rita Moreno welcoming you into her dressing room and telling you story after story. And I was so moved by her that I wrote this small sort of essay. I just dashed it off on my phone one day. And then when the show was canceled, I couldn't help myself. And I just tweeted it. And Gloria wrote me and was like, "You're a writer." And I was like, how dare you tell me that? How dare you say that to me? But it did get me excited about what's possible.
Are you back at all this? Because I know they're shooting now, their new season, One Day at a Time.
They are shooting now. I'm going to be doing some shadowing on that set.
Nice.
I'm I just want to learn more about all the types of different kinds of television that we're making, One Day is such a different animal than Brooklyn and a really different animal than anything else that I've ever been on. But I like it because it makes me think of, the beginning of my career was theater. And so those rehearsals in that live audience, I'm very used to. It's just now learning more about how do you shoot three cameras at a time and cut it together with a live audience there while you are watching the action and waiting for beats and how they land differently with a new audience than they did this afternoon when we did the run through. Man, it's so much to think about and I want to learn more about it.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And that I get to see you on the big screen really soon.
Yeah.
In the Heights. That trailer it blew me away. And I know you and I know Melissa Barrera and a lot of other people involved. And of course, Lynn has been on Brooklyn Nine-Nine and he's Lynn. But tell us, I don't know the show actually. I never saw the Broadway show. So I'm going in brand new and I'm not even reading up on it because I'm just going to enjoy the movie. But tell me about Carlos, who you're playing.
Yes, Carlos, who I'm playing. She's one of the women that works in Daniela's Salon, which is across the street from Usnavi's Bodega. Mm-hmm. So it's a very tight-knit neighborhood and everyone's sort of built a family in this neighborhood, and they're watching as this neighborhood essentially changes a lot and has changed a lot and is continuing to change. And so it becomes a sort of internal negotiation about how much do you say, okay, well, this is where I'm from, this is where I live, and no one's going to push me out. Or when do you decide, maybe I want to move to another neighborhood, maybe I want something different, it's how do you negotiate life's changes when it's going to change no matter what?
Are you singing and dancing?
I'm singing and dancing. Oh my God. I'm singing and dancing in it.
How fun was that?
It was awesome. Yeah. It was awesome. Oh, it was nerve-wracking because I'm not necessarily known as, you know, she doesn't have an album out. She wasn't in a musical on Broadway yet.
Yeah.
Chicago, if you're listening, exactly. I'm ready. I'm ready to play Roxy Hart anytime you want.
It. We can see it. I can see it. What's on your DVR these days? What do you watch when you sit down and watch TV?
I have watched Dairy Girls now twice through. I absolutely am obsessed with it.
Okay.
Nicola is like, now we're friends. I found her and stalked her on the internet. I'm like, please be my friend.
That's awesome.
I have been watching a lot of reality television. I've been watching Love Island, which recently had some sad, more sad news about it. Which I think is so, like, I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, you can cut this part if you want, but like,
yeah.
It's so brutal because it's such a fun show to watch, and you're watching these kids, like, really they're kids experiencing love and heartbreak for the first time, and in this like horribly, like, very tricky thing to negotiate. And then on top of that, they're being pushed out into the public eye, and like, none of us have any training for this. Like, nobody has any training for, like, your words really matter and people read your comments and they get hurt by them.
Yeah.
And like, sometimes that hurt layered on top of depression and pain can like add up and accumulate and cause tragedy.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah,
it's really tricky world that we're living in right now.
Let's say Brooklyn Nine-Nine goes a couple more years, which it easily could. Cause I know these guys are smart and creative and,
they are.
But what would you like to see for Rosa that they haven't gone there with her yet?
I think I'd like to see, you know, I think I'd like to see a long-term undercover sting with Rosa where it's sort of surprising. Every episode is kind of like, what's the undercover look this episode? Mm-hmm. What's the accent this episode? Because I think it'd be funny to do a bunch of crazy accents and like a bunch of weird undercover stuff. I think that I've not been utilized in that way. The little tidbits I've had of it when I do a different voice or something are really fun.
Yeah.
And then like, I personally, selfishly, would like to see the squad go back to that beach house.
Mm.
I think that was like season two, maybe three, where they went to Charles's ex-wife's beach house for the weekend. I'd like to see them go back there because now they're a different group.
Yeah.
You know, now it's very different. And so what will it be like when they're there together this time? You know, and what happens? Is there like a blackout? Do they get trapped in the house? Like, what's going
to
happen?
Okay, so you've already directed the show. I think you need to pitch those to Dan get in the writer's room. Why not write an episode?
I'll pitch hard.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for talking
Thank
to me,
you
though.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Nice talking to you, as always.
Thanks for that great chat, Stephanie. Please make sure to check out Brooklyn Nine-Nine every Thursday night at 9:30, 8:30 Central on NBC. And that's a wrap for this episode of the TV Insider Podcast. Big thanks to our producer, Lori Perna, and editor extraordinaire, Sammy Junio. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and follow us at TV Insider on Twitter and Instagram for more great TV coverage. And feel free to rate us on iTunes if you'd be so kind. And you can also leave us messages and let us know what you'd like to hear more of or less of, and we'll do what we can. Everyone, please keep staying safe out there and healthy. Until next time, I'm Jim Halterman. Goodbye.